Well, good morning. I'll just ask that both counsel please turn their cameras on. Good morning. Okay, welcome to the Court of Appeals. And we're calling the court back to order. My name is Theodora Gaitis, and I'm joined this morning by my colleagues, Judges Smith and Wheelock. We are now ready for the second oral argument on our calendar today. The case is A23QON T. Wynn Appellant versus Frank Knapper et al. Respondents. And we are now joined by both of the attorneys in the case. Good morning to you both. Counsel for appellant will have 15 minutes to present argument, and counsel for respondent will also have 15 minutes. Counsel for appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And I want to make sure before we begin with your arguments that you can both see the clock on the screen. Can you see it? Can you just nod if you can see it?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Do you see it, Mr. Abras or Abras?
I apologize, I don't, Your Honor. Is that here? Let me
Are
see.
you in gallery view? That will help.
Oh, here we go.
You
Here we go.
see
I
it?
see it. Yep.
Okay,
Thank
perfect.
you.
So yes, please be mindful of the time, which will appear on that clock. We are making a recording of today's argument. It's an audio-only recording, and that will appear on the court's website shortly. In order to facilitate that audio recording, I just ask that you both identify yourselves and the party you represent before you begin your arguments. And when you are not the attorney presenting your argument, please make sure that you are in the mute setting. And with that, we can begin with counsel for appellant.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is John Westrick. I represent the appellant, Ms. Wynn. We assert that the trial court abused its discretion in vacating the default judgments against the respondents under Rule 60.02, subpart F. We believe, given that the subpart F is reserved for extraordinary circumstances to avoid an unconscionable result or unforeseen contingencies, none of those were met here, and that the court really was correcting judicial error. For instance, Mr. Wayne Knapper says that he wasn't a party to the contract, so the court lacked a basis to find him liable. He says that at the hearing at pages 3, 5, and 7, but that's really judicial error. That's someone saying, hey, there's no basis to find me. The court, you made a mistake. Unfortunately, by defaulting, Mr. Wayne Knapper admitted the allegations in the plaintiff's complaint. And that by admitting the allegations, one of the allegations was, I had a contract with Wayne and Frank Knapper. And so by defaulting, of course, he admitted that he had, Mr. Wayne Knapper admitted he had a contract. And that goes out. And frankly, there's just no extraordinary circumstance. There's nothing that's unforeseen. And I do want to remind the court that this court has held a couple of times that judicial error is not an unforeseen circumstance, that it happens. And so our view is, as to Mr. Wayne Knapper, too bad, you should have shown up and you needed to show these unforeseen contingencies or some kind of unconscionable result, and it's just not there. Likewise with Mr. Frank Knapper, he raised some affirmative contractual defenses. All fine and well, but if you don't raise an affirmative defense, you'll waive it. And so he never raised them prior to the judgment, so he waived them. And on top of it, one of the
defenses— Doesn't this argument, Mr. Westrick, if I may interrupt you, doesn't it just sort of apply to every default where the person doesn't answer them? It seems like you're saying the judicial error concept is you should be appealing rather than moving to reopen. Like that's sort of what's underlying that. If you're trying to correct judicial error, you should take an appeal. You shouldn't go back to the district court. But it seems like your argument would sort of swallow up every case where a defendant didn't answer.
Well, I don't think so. So you have, for instance, under A, you have the excusable neglect. and you come in and say, okay, I got served with this. I didn't answer. I, for whatever reason, I turned it over to my lawyer. I turned it over to the insurance company. My wife got sick. I mean, there's a whole laundry list that does that. But if you don't meet the requirements of Rule 6002A, you don't get your default judgment set aside. And so my argument about judicial error really isn't my argument. It's what the Supreme Court and this court has said numerous times. And you know, for instance, on a Rule 6002A, that's really not a judicial error problem. It's a, oh, I messed up and here's what happened and please excuse me from this. Now, the respondents have acknowledged this is not an excusable neglect case. I don't know why they didn't answer. I don't know why, after all the notices they got, they didn't file an answer. They didn't show up at the hearing. But the burden is on them to show that we do this. And the fact that we prefer cases to go to trial, which is true, that also applies to every default judgment. And we know that not all default judgments are set aside, notwithstanding that overarching concern. So again, with respect to Mr. Frank Knapper, he raised contractual defenses, one of which isn't even a defense. Part performance, as opposed to substantial performance, is not a defense to a contract action. But how was the trial judge to apply at the default hearing these affirmative defenses that were never asserted? How was someone supposed to do this? The judge was not supposed to all of a sudden become counsel for the absent defendants and say, well, what about this? Or what about this? Or what about that? And so to me, it seems we put the cart before the horse, right? We've somehow the respondents have come in and said, oh, it's completely unfair we do this because we weren't here. Well, why weren't you here? We've never really learned why they weren't here. But again, the same thing with Frank Knapper. His having contractual defenses is really judge, you got it wrong. And since you got it wrong, that's judicial error. And that's not what 6002 is for. 6002 is for something that means it's not fair and it's not right that the judgment remain. And part of that is, in this instance, because it's under subpart F, it really needs to be something unconscionable, unforeseen, or as the courts say, exceptional. And there's nothing exceptional about what happened here. And so that, in our view, the trial court abused its discretion. I'll get the court back on schedule unless there's questions.
Well, I do have a question. It seemed to me that, I mean, just based on the transcript of the hearing, that the district court thought that the, you know, extraordinary circumstance was that there was maybe a trial issue in this case. Is that sufficient?
No, because there's always a tribal issue. The tribal issue, remember, is part of 6002A, which says you have a reasonable defense on the merits. And so that's included under 6002A. That is not included under 6002F. And so the fact that there might be we had said, I thought that perhaps the district court had conflated the two and we had a little Venn diagram overlap, for lack of a better phrase, and that was an error to do that. The fact that they might have defenses or might have had defenses, that doesn't apply under a 6020F. It's unconscionability. So I think one of the big unconscionability 6002F ones was where someone came in, they had a car accident, they had minimal damages, and they came in and they were given a default judgment for some huge sum of money. And the Supreme Court, I don't think there was a court of appeals at the time, said, okay, this is too much money, this is unconscionable, and so we're going to use this catch-all exception here, and it's because this is an unconscionable result, and that's the kind of place for F to be used. Not, we just didn't show up, and as I said quite bluntly in our thing, we just thumbed our nose at the court process, and then after somebody says, oh, you're going to collect this, then we come running into court and saying how sad it is. If there's no other questions, I will yield this part of my time, and as I said, we'll get everybody back on schedule. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your argument, Next, we will hear from counsel for respondent. You will have 15 minutes when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court. First of all, I will apologize to the court and opposing counsel for not, I am not sure what happened. I transitioned firms in September and thought I had done everything to be properly notified. So I do apologize and appreciate the court's willingness to still let me participate.
And before you begin your argument, could you please identify yourself and the party you're representing for the record as well? I appreciate the apology too, though.
Attorney John Abris, I represent Wayne Knapper and Frank Knapper, the respondents. The main argument the Knappers made to vacate the judgment, yes, was under 60.02F, that there were other reasons justifying relief from the judgment. And I think I would, I'll speak briefly to the idea of unconscionability. If that, you know, as a standard, that it would be unconscionable for the Knappers to be subject to this judgment when Wayne Knapper, at least, is not a party, or at least we've shown a lot of pretty substantial evidence that he was not a party to the contract. And that it would be, at the very least, a tribal issue, as the district court decided. And with Frank Knapper, I think, among other things, one of the arguments we made was that he had, provided services in an amount equal to whatever he had been paid to that point. So in other words, the actual amount of damages was not $20,000. The appellant was effectively seeking a full refund of all the money she had paid to Mr. Knapper, to Frank Knapper, when in fact there was not damages in that amount. And we do, in our brief, respondents do cite a case that at least speaks to that issue, that a lack of damages could be grounds for vacating a judgment. Ultimately, we would just point to that the district court has, you know, broad discretion to decide what types of circumstances under 60.02F would justify, you know, relief from the judgment. I mean, beyond that, I don't have much to add I don't have anything else to add other than what's in respondent's brief. So if the court has a question or any questions, I'm willing to answer that. Otherwise, I will yield the rest of my time.
I'm not seeing any questions for you. You lucked out. We'll turn things back to you. If you would like to do a rebuttal, Mr. Westrick, up to you.
Thank you. If I just might, I just want to again remind the court, when you don't answer, you admit the allegations in the complaint. And so there was a basis for the district court to do all of the things that were done here. And again,
but Mr. Westrick, if I might just speak to that, I mean, the district court didn't make its determination because it concluded that Wayne who's alleges not a party, or Frank? I've forgotten.
It's Wayne, Your Honor.
Wayne, right? I mean, it heard testimony from Ms. Nguyen about what damages she had at the default judgment and then what costs she had, and then granted default judgment because of that. And then when he reopened it, of course, said, it didn't make a legal determination. I understand your argument about admission, but I think that's kind of problematic because there are cases where even under F, default judgment is granted and affirmed because, the evidence was insufficient, for example, to support the damages. You know, it didn't go on. Well, you didn't answer, and so therefore you've admitted the damages, et cetera. You know, so it just seems to swallow. I don't know. F is a residual rule, and if it was always that you didn't answer and it's admitted, it just seems to foreclose too much use of F, and it seems to sort of overstate what happened here.
Well, usually with the damages, it's something big. And remember, partial performance is what Mr. Frank Knapper is claiming, is I did work that was worth this, but the contract was for a complete job. And so partial performance isn't a defense. Substantial performance is a defense, but not partial performance. So if I have a contract price that I'm going to do X for $20,000 and I do a lot of stuff, but I don't do X, I don't get to come in and say, yeah, but the stuff I did do was worth 20 grand because the contract price is the contract price. And so that's part of the reason why the damages here are okay. And of course, if the court was just doing it because of damages, then what it should have done is says, I'm not getting rid of liability. I'm just going to allow you a new chance to show damages instead of setting aside the whole default judgment. But again, our view is this isn't the extraordinary or exceptional circumstance. This isn't something that's there. There's no unconscionability. There's no unforeseen circumstances. And I have yet to know why they didn't show up and nobody's tried to explain it. And so I would just ask the court to reverse and remand. Thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments this morning. The case is now submitted to the court and we will issue our decision within the statutory timeframe. So that concludes our second argument on the calendar. Thanks to both counsel.